Hi there, everybody. This is Armand Demel with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. In the studio with me today, Linda Vanella, Julian Joiello, helping us pull this together for you. Today we're going to talk about quite a few things, but one of the things I want to get clear is about the many faces of anger. Anger itself, it's such an interesting emotion. Where does it come from? It's a defense mechanism that evolved. We get angry when we're hurt, when we think we may be hurt, when somebody takes something away, when we just can't stand ourselves, we get angry. Anger is the forbidden emotion. Anger is one of those things that our society decided it would be much better off if nobody ever showed it. Because anger sometimes leads to violence. And violence, we don't have room for violence anymore. That's why we have lawyers. Parents try to get rid of anger because they could see with their children that the children have a reason to get angry, but they have no room for the child's anger. I have no room for you having resistance to me. So they get rid of your anger through guilt or threat or loss or punishment. But you see, anger is just an emotion. It's not bigger or smaller than other emotions. It just feels bigger. Because tension, strange, and chemical changes that go on inside you, plus your own repression, makes it feel bigger. Anger's okay. But our society, our parents would not rather you did not feel it. So how much anger do you see between people who supposedly love each other but don't express it? And should they express it? It becomes a big question. Do you say every time you get angry, do you say something to your partner? Or do you sometimes say, well, let me figure out what it is that I'm angry about? Let's see what the real issue is. It's so interesting that certain cultures will blurt right out. In my family, anger was there all the time. Everybody was angry at everybody. We're in my friend's house next door, everybody was nice, pleasant, but I'm not sure which one were happier. There's a thing called passive-aggressive anger, where you don't show your anger, but it comes out anyway. You wind up late.
This passive-aggressive anger, where many times you hold back the anger, and oftentimes it comes out in other ways. For instance, somehow, in many, like you say, in families, when kind of blurting out and being free with anger is sometimes banned or repressed, then a child will likely maybe do something inappropriate to another child on the playground or something like that. That would be a passive-aggressive use of anger.
The more common one is lateness, not fulfilling tasks, stuff like that. So it's all saying we're angry. And then anger turns into a kind of depression because you get angry at yourself for getting angry. Now, there are some people who don't ever feel angry. Do you know that? In the Enneagram, they're usually nines. There are certain people who never feel it. So if you, as a therapist, ask them if they were angry, they may say yes, but they don't feel it. In fact, you as a therapist very often have to get the person to identify the fact that they were angry. And one of the ways you get them to identify that they're angry, which is kind of interesting, is when they're talking about something, sometimes they're hitting their own bodies, like they're slapping their shoulders or they're slapping their legs.
Yes, and I find it very interesting when I have patients like that, and they say, no, I don't get angry. I don't feel angry. I don't even, I'm not violent. So they oftentimes associate anger with violence, and it's something that they shy away from. However, when I'll ask questions like, well, do you ever feel like you have a sort of cynical sense of humor? All of a sudden, they'll sort of crack out and, you know, come out into a laugh. Oh, yeah, I'm sort of like that, yeah. And do you oftentimes feel like you make fun of people and, you know, you kind of get even in other ways? Yeah, I do that too. So oftentimes it'll come out in ways, but they don't see it as per se anger, so they can't define it as such, but it comes out.
Sarcasm, spitefulness, resentment. Just being miffed, things with an ED ending, like bothered, aggravated, outraged. Those are all signs of it. Now, what difference does it make? Well, because if anger is felt but not expressed, but manifests, how does it manifest? One of the ways it manifests most often in couples is through a loss in sexuality. You show me a couple who's not having sex, and I'll show you a couple who's angry. And they'll say, oh no, we love each other so much, it's so deep. But somewhere in there, there's that resentment. I'm not going to be vulnerable to you. This is Armand DeMille with the gang here. We're talking about the positive mind. And we're talking about love relationships and one of the manifestations of love relationships, one of the pieces of it which have to do with the expression of anger. We're also taking your calls today at 212-957-2729. Write that number down. 212-957-2729. And when you feel like you're related to something that we're talking about, give a call. We may be able to get to the phone. Many men and women feel really dependent on each other. When they can't live without a man or a woman, they turn their neediness into conquest. They seduce people. If you need somebody, you seduce them, and then you hold them, you trap them, and then you reject them. That's what womanizing and manizing is all about. Find them, conquer them, and get rid of them. Don't depend on them. The reason you want to have a lot of different women is because any one, you'd be too vulnerable to just one. Take a look at something like, listen to this just for a variation, bulimia. Bulimia is a form of anger, right? You need the nurturance. It means you got to take in the food. And then you take it in and then you spit it out. It's almost like, I need your breast. I need your love. But I'm giving it back. Anger could also take the form of workaholism. You strive towards independence with fury. Why? Because you never want to depend on anybody or anything again. Workaholics are angry people. Because when you were little, you depended on somebody who disappointed you. So you got angry and took control, never to need again. Taking control of everything is a form of anger. You know anybody who controls everything? So is anger always a good thing to express? Well, sometimes yes. When you've inhibited yourself and your whole life from feeling it. Sometimes no, when you do it too often. Some people meditate and they become vegans. And they do passive things like yoga, not to give yoga a bad name. But they do it because they're trying to hide from their anger. And usually you see it just manifests in their behaviors, in their isolation, and in their shoulders. What about you, friends? How do you deal with your anger? How do you feel about the anger that you feel inside? What do you do with your wounds? Well, one would think that everything is psychological. But another interesting study just came up from McGill University, which talks about people who have and do not have, who find themselves being monogamous. They look at a brain chemical called vasopressin, which is a bonding hormone. Men who carry a variation of the gene that has a high chemical vasopressin present were less likely to be married, and those who had wed were even more likely to have serious marital problems and unhappy wives. Among men who carry two copies of the gene variant, about a third had experienced a serious relationship crisis in the past year, double the number. So we're saying genetically, we are somehow affected in a way that stops us from being related that way. What could it be? I mean, right down to the genes? Is there something inside us that could possibly poison us to relationships? Are you one of those people who just can't, are not built for love? Makes you wonder sometime. This is Armand DeMille with the gang. Let's explore the question of how close is close. When two people love each other, what's the ideal? What's the goal? Is the ultimate love relationship the one in which two souls meet, connect, agree to stick together through thick and thin, with or without separation, exclusive loving, forsaking all others? You're my number one priority. Sounds pretty good, doesn't it? I remember a wise Chinese saying that went, in a marriage, one must maintain the following priorities. Now, this is your priority of your relationship. First and above all, your highest priority is your mate. They are first. Second is your children. Third are your parents. Fourth are your friends. So when you think about a love relationship that you may have, do you choose your children over your mate? Do you choose your parents over your children? The rule again, in a true loving relationship, the highest priority is your partner. That makes sense, doesn't it? But then when your children give you a hard time, or your parents give you a hard time about your partner, and you say, no, I'll go with my parents instead. This is where it works against the relationship. When your priorities get mixed up, the marriage is violated. The relationship is violated. When you choose children over wife, friends over family, family over children, that's throwing the love into chaos. How's about this other design? Two people, completely independent, meet and join. Their careers are their first priority. They agree to respect each other's needs vis-a-vis the profession. If she says, I have to travel to Paris for a design show, he understands and he wishes her the best. Their lives are their respective careers, and when they find free time, they spend it with each other. She may or may not be dedicated to world peace, spend every free moment at it. He may be a nutritionist or an accountant. They sleep together, make love, wake together, perhaps a midday phone call or text. They build a home together on the side. It could work. It sounds beautiful. There's one level of intimacy in love relationships where one or both partners abandon their self and only identify themselves as part of the other person. Do you ever see that? They have chosen to merge, to do everything together. You know, I know of people who do that with their dogs, Linda. I know of people who have relationships with their dogs where, you know, you talk about your dog as your partner. And these could be married people. They don't talk about their husbands or mates that way, but they talk about their dogs. We know one person like that, don't we? Yeah. But in this merged relationship, they have chosen to merge, to do everything together. They may even work together, like you and I work together, right? But it's really merged. One person knows what the other is doing every moment. They're absolutely connected. They're merged, fused, one. Neither one could be alone again. They embrace each other, mind, body, and spirit. The I is replaced with a we in almost every phrase. Having the same last name is not enough. They get license plates with joined names on it, like Paul and Martha become Parther. They buy matching jogging suits. They ask, what are you wearing tonight, so they can coordinate their appearance. I know folks like this, two peas in a pod. When one is distressed, the other can't be happy. When one dies, the other usually dies within a year. Among your friends, Julian, do you see much of this nowadays? Much of this when people get together as a couple, do they merge?
Yeah, I mean, I've had that experience myself. It's like nonstop every single day, sleepover, stay over, see you, dinner, breakfast, everything. My best friend is like that right now with his girlfriend. And it's definitely like a fusion. Like, it's like nonstop, and all the choices they make are for the other person.
Are mutual.
We're mutual.
And it's wonderful, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, my roommate actually just came back from Florence for like 4 days for his girlfriend's birthday, like just on a whim because he needed to.
And the feeling of that is like a fabulous loss of self.
It is.
Into the other person. It's like a great visit.
It is. It's pretty incredible. The kind of merging. It's not just like spending time, but like you're experiencing all this stuff together in like a very a deep, I guess you'd say deep way. Yeah.
Well, a deep sometimes is too deep.
Too deep.
You know, sometimes it's so deep that you get lost in the bottom of it.
What's interesting, I actually don't remember a lot of the details in my relationships that were like that, like of what actually happened.
Mm. Very interesting.
When I think back.
Linda, what are the consequences when somebody gets lost in that?
Well, I think it's very interesting. I think we have all, as adults, experienced that in some way or another. And I think it's almost like a chemical high. It's like that in love feeling. I've lost myself. I've surrendered myself. I'm cherished. I'm no longer alone. So I think the intensity brings us into this sort of chemical state. Interestingly, that Julian says, I can't remember details about that, because I think it's almost a hypnotic state when, you know, when we're in it, it's high, it's euphoric. However, I think that the surrender of the selves can only be limited to a temporary space and time. And I think that...
Well, do you know of anything more beautiful, Linda, though? Now think about it.
No, I don't know of anything more beautiful.
I mean, it's really amazing, right?
Yes.
You get lost in love.
Yes, yes. And I do think that when couples do fall in love and become life partners, I think that that stays. I think that that remains. It may take different shapes and different forms, but I think that union, that chemical high, that euphoria, that feeling of being cherished in your wholeness by someone else, and that you have the capacity to invite another being into your space in such an intimate way, has wonderful, wonderful benefits.
Yeah, I just never seen it last. You know, but they call it the honeymoon phase. And when the honeymoon phase goes, another hurdle comes in. Then you get the dishoneymoon phase. And then you get this other phase that comes back, and there's an opportunity. But usually the most intense, deep, bonded loves don't seem to work. They seem to be some point like they're headed down, 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 and they hit a certain spot and they can't go any further.
Well, I think the expectations of that euphoric high, I think, is somewhat, you know, it's really not... It's not reality. And I think that oftentimes if you expect that that's going to stay, it's almost like the day after Christmas. You get let down, you get depressed, you get, oh my goodness, now reality sets in. However, I do feel when there is that bond, when there is that deep relationship that is of two people who are inspired and motivated to continue that, that can continue. And it takes different shapes, but it does continue to exist.
212-957-2729. Hi, Samantha, you're on the phone with us.
Oh, hi.
Hi there, welcome.
Yeah, this is the first time I've heard your show. It's very good. I just recently got married, and the man I married is quite a bit younger than me. And it seems that with both of our anger issues, you know, it never occurred to me that that can come out in so many different ways, as you had stated. And the way that I'm having a rough time with it is the working issue, because the trust isn't there. And I'm just curious, how do you get over that hump of helping somebody who's so angry that they're trusted because they've been so hurt and damaged that you cannot get past this trust, like worrying that they're going to leave you all the time?
Well, that's part of the deal. You see, part of the deal about being related to somebody who's significantly younger than you is believing that they will be dependent on you. See, that was part of the original deal. You believe, or he believes, that you're... How much younger is he, 12 years?
No, 20.
20 years. Okay, so in some way, you're a mama.
Yeah, I didn't realize that until we got married.
Okay, so let's start with it. It's part of the design. The design is, he says, I want a strong, powerful person to take care of me. And you say, okay, I'm looking for somebody who's not going to challenge me, who's not going to leave me, who will depend on me.
Right.
And that's the deal. And with those two things matching, it feels wonderful. But then you notice that he's afraid of you. He's afraid to tell you the truth because the consequences are too strong.
Oh, how do you fix that?
Well, the biggest thing you could do, what's your name?
My name is Samantha.
Samantha, the biggest thing you could do is to welcome the truth. Now, this is a very hard thing to do. Whenever he talks to you and he says something to you and he tells you something that you don't like, instead of debating it, fighting it, or rejecting it in any way, you learn to say, thank you for telling me this.
Oh, I see.
Now, this is very difficult to do because every part of you is going to react.
Right.
But thank you for telling me. There is no greater gift that a partner could give his or her partner, than to tell them when they are angry.
Right. It's very hard, too. That's the vulnerability.
That's right. That's right.
Mm. All right. Well, thank you so much. And
it's my pleasure,
Samantha. I'll be listening to your show more. Thank
you. Sure. Go to the website. There's a lot of information on this on thepositivemind.com. A lot of stuff about relationships and dealing with this issue.
Okay. Great. Thank you so much. Have a blessed day.
My pleasure. 212-957-2729. Now, it's an ideal relationship, and sometimes it's mutual. Sometimes two people meet who are so unhappy by themselves that they welcome the merger just as resolution. You know, it's like you're two people in the streets, you have nothing. You don't have anything at all. You don't have a pot. You don't have anything. And you find each other. It feels wonderful. It's like two children in a crawl space. Two people with miserable, deficient childhood who never get over the wounds cling to each other. And they find peace. And it's not perfect, so they can find out what they had thought. That if only I could find the right mate, I'd be happy. That, if you were depressed before, the depression may lift a little, but it doesn't go away. Let's take another call. Catherine, hi, this is Armand DeMille. Oops. Hi, Catherine, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
Hi, Armand, how are you?
Good.
I'm relating to everything you're saying about anger in the beginning, and now it's getting a little interesting in relationships. I'm also thinking about relationships, you know, in my extended family, but I guess everything comes full circle.
Well, you've been through this a whole bunch, Catherine. Huh? You are somebody who has really tried and worked very hard at uncovering yourself and challenging yourself. I could hear that. So where do you run into a big problem with it now?
I wouldn't call it a problem, but it's a challenge to, it's a change to recognize the anger and be okay with it, but without it turning into rage, like still having to control it a little, I guess, or not let it take over.
Yeah, because it does take over, right?
It can take over, yes.
And when it takes over, what happens to you?
In the past, suppressed it so much, or labeled it as bad, like you were saying, with the anger that I didn't allow it in. So I guess everything's about moderation.
And when do you have trouble with moderation?
I related to when you said about controlling things with anger. I think, like, keeping the house clean and organized is one of the ways I channel my anger, like the control. And I guess just learning to, like, let go. Like, let the anger in, accept it and deal with it and face it. But the hardest part is, I think, letting it go sometimes. I don't know why, though. Why is that?
Oh, you're so brave. Because you're an animal who's fighting for survival. You know? And it's amazing. You're such a brave person. You never give up, do you, Catherine?
No, can't give up.
Yeah, you got a lot of good, you got a lot of good people on your side.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
All right, so Catherine, right now.
Okay.
Let me hear you bark.
Rough.
A little louder.
It feels silly. It feels silly.
Of course.
I guess it's vulnerability.
Okay, let's do it. Come on. Bark.
Rough.
Mm-hmm. You see the feeling that's behind that one?
Yeah, it's like, it's
okay.
It's
okay, wait a minute. Let me get.
Like, if you told me to scream, I could probably scream.
Screaming is easy. No, I want to hear a bark. I need your bark. I need Julian's bark.
Okay.
Get ready. Come on, Julian. I need All right, Linda, I need a bark.
Ruff!
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 All right, here we go. Ruff. Come on, Catherine, a little louder.
Ruff! Ruff! Ruff!
Now.
It's uncomfortable. It's hard.
Yes, and you're laughing.
I don't mind it, but I, you know.
And
it,
you're
it,
laughing.
It shows you a new level, you know?
That's right. And you're laughing.
Yes. Out of nervous, I think. Relief. A different relief form, I guess.
Because you're beautiful and you're acceptable, and to us, no matter what you do, it's fine. Fine, fine. Which is just what you need in life, and it's hard to find.
When you were saying also about children, I work with some children that are nonverbal, nonvocal.
Yes.
And when you said about, like, parents, it's like a hard emotion for parents to deal with, that they shut it out or want to turn it off. So it's always interesting in my work to watch how parents deal with the anger of their nonvocal children. It's a whole other animal.
What do they usually do?
The parents or the children?
The parents.
The parents are like puppets because they just want to make it stop.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it is detrimental then to the child's development because they learn to... At times, they can learn to manipulate. It's not a good learned behavior in all situations. But at the same time, too, for some children that are, again, that are nonverbal, I think the parents, if the parents would just label it for them and say, oh, I see you're angry because I took your cup, I'm sorry, or I should have warned you I was going to do this, or somebody's leaving and that, I think that would help the children.
Well, good that we have you around.
We need to learn to identify it. I'm sorry?
Good that we have you around as a guide. We're going to have to be going. We're going to take a short break.
No problem.
Thank you for calling in, Catherine.
Have a good day.
Speak to you again.
Thank you, Armand.
Sure. This is Armand DeMille with you. It's a positive mind. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, a little special music.
Thank you.
while back. I received this beautiful piece that someone had written to someone that they were in love with. And where they had broken up for a period of time, and then they were going to get back together again, he wrote, "While we were gone, a half of me was missing, like grieving a child that was aborted long, long ago. While we were gone, it was like a dull ache that only surfaced at quiet moments or times of empty reality, meaningless, riskless conversations with peoples whose souls were on hiatus. How I ached for the real connection, the one where skin swims together and words have breath, and the smell of your moist tenderness wrapped around my thighs. While we were gone, my mind replaced my flesh. My flesh replaced my heart. My heart replaced my soul, and my soul left in search for you. Everything out of order, nothing in its right place, separated by time and space, meaning missing, missing meaning. Oh, when we return, we must pray together. Prayers beyond beliefs, building a deeper spirit that neither of us alone can shatter, even when we're gone." For you, my friends. So we're talking about love and intimacy and closeness, and we have Jane on the line with us. Hi, Jane. This is Armand DeMille. The number here is 212-957-2729. We have only one line coming in nowadays, so if you call, just keep recalling until you get through. Hi, Jane.
Hi, Armand. I listen to you all the time whenever I can. I think you're wonderful.
Thank you.
My question, you know, like everyone else, you know, it's so many angles to this, I don't even know what to say first. I'm married a very, very long time. My husband retired just a few months ago. I think that a lot of what we had between us in the way of anger, which is sizable, was buried, not buried, but just put aside. And we're having a lot of conflicts now. And I'm thinking of that. I've thought of that phrase, passive-aggressive, but somehow when you said passive-aggressive anger, there are some issues that he says here. His main issue with me is too much clutter. He's an engineer, too much clutter in the house.
Too much garter?
I'm sorry?
Clutter. Oh, too much clutter.
Too much clutter, I'm sorry. Uh-huh. And my main issue with him is that he is not there for me.
Mm-hmm.
He is not. He can be demonstrative. He can be feeling. I've seen it. I know it's there. And as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking, and to be honest, we usually, I can't believe I'm saying this on the show, but we usually don't have issues in bed.
Mm-hmm.
And we are having more of those issues in bed. And he was tested for testosterone, and it was fine. Yeah. And I thought for sure it was that.
But it was since the retirement, right?
Well, not just since the retirement. It's been a while.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, I'm angry too, but it manifests differently. He can be terribly unkind, brutally cruel. And it's hard. It's very, very hard.
Yeah, so you two have been able to get through life with your respective businesses, doing stuff, and not having to face a lot of issues.
Yes.
When someone retires, when this stuff begins to happen, a lot of your dissatisfactions begin to appear.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes one of these wonderful opportunities where you get a chance to get over this hurdle and get a closer relationship than ever before.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an amazing opportunity. Some people just go stone dead.
Mm-hmm.
They just ignore each other and they throw it under the under the bus.
Mm-hmm.
It's the end, you know, that's it, so you don't go any further. But I find it such an exciting time, especially if you're in your 60s. It's such an exciting time to get to know each other for the first time.
Mm.
How do you do that?
Well, I just should add to you that there are an amazingly unusual amount of things. There are unusual things that we have in common, my husband and I.
Mm-hmm.
Huge walkers, hikers, national park type people.
Sure.
Not materialistic people. We're both into organics and health. It's almost a joke because lately I say to him frequently how paradoxical it is that we're so, both of us, into all these exercise and nutritional aspects of health. And meanwhile, honestly, I feel like we're killing each other.
Sure, you can't get together. You need somebody in the middle.
He won't go. He won't do anything.
Mm-hmm. Then you need to do it yourself.
I've done that. And it takes me just so far. And beyond that, very stubborn. I mean, I've been involved, I don't know if you're familiar with this, Armand, but I've been involved with something locally called NSA, Network Spinal
yes,
Analysis.
Yes, I know about that. Uh-huh.
I have found it extraordinary. Just extraordinary. In fact, I would say it's largely 90% responsible for this dreadful place I'm finding myself in.
That's the point. You know, I could say to you, I've seen people approach this over and over again, and they're missing a point.
Mm-hmm.
And the point that you seem to be missing has to do with early childhood needs. What's surfacing now?
You're right. You're totally right.
Tell me about it.
Usual. I've heard you tell this to people, and I can't even tell you how right on you are.
Well, tell me how right on I am.
Well, with him, it's gotten to a point now, his parents are both deceased. With him, there's no relationship at all with his siblings at all. Nobody can talk to each other. There was no skill in... It was all that was emphasized because his father, I think, my opinion, was a very selfish
man. And what about with you?
And he just... Everything is about independence to him. With me, wow. I have been told over years, and I'm over 60, so I've been in and out of therapy a long time. What I've been told is my parents were divorced when I was 30. They never should have been together at all. They were both good people, but they were terrible together. And from what I've been told, even early on, because we lived, the three of us, my parents and I at the time, without my sibling, she wasn't born yet, in my grandparents' house with other people in the house.
Whoa. Don't take me so far afield before we get to the kind of flooring they had there.
A critical thing that I should tell you is that I've been told, because I don't remember this, but I've been told my father was a very, I don't know whether he was bipolar, I don't know, emotional, bored, not even like my husband, because he could go physical, my father. Not a lot, but he could go physical.
Wait, okay, now listen. When you speak and you try to get personal, you spin off on edges
okay. That
make me lose you, okay? So let me just speak to you for a moment.
Okay.
You've never felt safe.
That's right. I've been told that.
Okay, so that feeling of not being safe, you're now looking for that safety in this relationship. Your husband has never felt safe. He's trying to control everything to make it so that he can be safe. But you're both trying to feel safe alone.
Right.
What we need is some way for the two of you to feel safe together. Now, I know you've done a lot of self-exploration, but from the way that you're talking about it, you have a lot of reasons and a lot of connections, but your feelings aren't connected.
Okay.
So I would think another shot is worthwhile, and I think sending me an email describing this to me, and I'll be able to respond to you in a much better way, because I don't think we have the time for it right now on the phone.
Okay.
All right. What's your name? You're Jane?
Jane. Actually, Armand, I have a opportunity to talk to you because I made that contribution.
Oh, great. So I'm going to be meeting with you.
Well, yes. It's a little complicated, too, but I won't go into that.
Well, I imagine your life is complicated, which is why your husband says there's a lot of clutter.
Yep.
Okay, well, we'll be in touch. Thank you for calling in.
Armand, you're wonderful, Armand. Thank you.
Sure. 212-957-2729. 212-957-2729. Two people with miserably deficient childhood who never get over the wounds cling together and they find peace. So it's not perfect, so they can find out what they thought. That if only I could find the right mate, I'd be happy. That isn't true. But if you were depressed before, the depression may lift for a while, but doesn't go away. It's just that now you have someone else to share your misery. And that's not bad. Not a panacea. What kind of people tend to want the fused relationship? When does the dream of finding your we take precedence over everything and anything that represents an I? When do you want to give up the I completely? What kind of people hope to lose themselves in another person? It's simple. People with bad eyes welcome a we faster than people who like their eyes. Interesting that the word eyes could also mean the two things in the middle of your head, right? If you have a bad eye, you welcome we. Now, this usually leads to another kind of relationship, and one that is usually pretty chaotic. When one person has a strong I personality and enjoys their aloneness, and the other has a not-so-happy I and is looking to merge. This makes for a lot of arguments. The strong I enjoys their aloneness, and the other has a not-so-happy I. The strong I fights for his or her separateness, individuality, privacy, aloneness. The other represents the separateness, invades the privacy, arguing for more intimacy. You're afraid to be intimate, you know, is the accusation. Now, before I go further, let me clarify that the strong individual, the strong I, is not necessarily any healthier emotionally than the person who wants to fuse. Independence is often based on fear and anger. Independence is also often fear of depending on anybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're talking about the relationships that are bonded as opposed to non-bonded, and we have on the air Linda. Linda, hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
Hi, Armand.
Hi there.
So you just mentioned about safety, and that's, you know, hitting me like a bullet.
Where does it hit you?
In the whole body.
Tell me about yours. Yes, I'm here. I can't hear you.
Okay, so I turned my radio off, and so I'm dealing with my verbally abusive father, who still abuses as I'm an adult. I don't live with him. And at this time, I'm not speaking to him. I haven't spoken to him for over 6 months.
Are you there?
I'm here.
You haven't spoken to your father for 6 months?
I'm sorry?
You haven't spoken to your father for 6 months?
For 6 months, right, because my mother became ill 6 months ago, and I was trying to help her, and he was verbally abusing her, and I tried to tell him that you're not helping. She's not feeling well right now. She won't go to the doctor, and he couldn't even listen to me. So I put my hands on his shoulders, and I said, I'm trying to help you. And he put his hands around my wrist and pushed me enough that I didn't push him back. I don't know if I could. I didn't even try. And so my question to you is, my mother is not completely in denial about this, but won't do anything. She won't leave him. I asked him to go to therapy, and then I'm afraid to go to therapy with him alone because I'm afraid he's going to twist it around and say, well, I did all these good things for you. Even though I scream and yell at you, all the good things should make up for that. But I've never felt safe.
Yeah.
This has been going on since childhood.
How old are you now?
My 40s.
Okay, so it's time to give it up.
Give it up.
Yeah, time to give up your father. And time to give up trying to feel safe with him.
Right. Do I ask my mother for any help?
No.
Or any...
They're not involved. This is all up to you.
Well, all up to me.
Yeah, this is all you're looking to remain or to find that place in childhood where that you've been looking for your whole life. And it's unfortunate you're no longer a kid. So you're never going to be safe. Tell me about the last romantic relationship you had where you felt safe.
It's with someone on and off for years.
On and off. Do they have other relationships?
No. He doesn't.
So it's been one person on and off for years, but you
know.
No.
I mean, I've had other relationships. You know, I will break up with him and then have other relationships, but I don't feel safe, and eventually I walk away crying.
So you know there's a piece of you on the inside that's living out this drama with your dad, right?
Right.
Over and over again.
Right.
And the therapy you may do is to try to work it out in some way. I'm sure you've been in therapy.
Yes.
Right? And it's the unfortunate thing is none of this is leading to you giving up the drama.
Right.
So that's the place we got to go.
And so do I just walk away from my whole family? Because my brother...
Well, you do in your heart. Uh-huh. But, you know, it's a good thing to do that with support around. There you need a therapist. There you need somebody like Linda Vanella, who's here. And Linda, meet Linda. Hey, Linda, meet Linda.
Yes, let me speak to Linda. Linda, I'm listening to you, and it's that feeling of, you know, where is my dad? And now, of course, why isn't mom protecting me? So
why isn't mom protecting me since I'm a child?
Exactly. But, you know, as Armand is saying, it really has nothing to do with them. At this point in your life, I think it's time for you to get some assistance, some help, for you to be able to address this and find your own place of safety so that you can free yourself of this. And as Armand says, let it go. Let it go. Because the search
any belongings that I have in their house or any help that they want to give me, do I accept that?
No, none of that becomes relevant until you look inside. And you look inside when you find a different way of finding your safety. Listen, you know, hey, Linda, by the way, how about a shout out to the group you met with last night?
Yes, to all of my women who came last night, we began our women's group, and this is a very big subject. That's the powerful tool, the tool of safety and connection that, you know, that we can find within ourselves. And so therefore, then we can let go of the search that I feel, Linda, you're on, and the search brings us into places that we need not go. So the safety is right here, and I hope you women are listening to this show that we were speaking about last night and can relate. I'm sure there'll be some buzzing about this subject because it's a subject of great importance and great power. So, Linda, I welcome you to send an email. I would love to hear from you, and I certainly will answer that as best I know how because the safety is within yourself.
And the answer to this, Linda, is... It's about time, you know? It's time to release it. Because when you do, you'll be a free person, and that's what we're looking for. So safe is one thing, free is another. I prefer freedom.
And communication? Do I continue to communicate with my mother, even though I'm...
Those are all irrelevant questions. Once you're free, you're easy to communicate. It's not a matter of how you behave now. It's a matter of how you behave when you feel free. Thank you for calling in. So now before I go further, let me clarify that there's not one is better than the other. That love could be any number of forms. Someone who's engulfed as a child, smothered by a parent who tend to merge with them. So the strong personality, the one who tries to maintain separateness, may just be as fearful as the one who wants to lose themselves in another person. But they tend to feel better day to day. They're not as desperate. They find solace in aloneness, while the other hates being alone. So sometimes the two types do get together. But then the encroachment starts and the strong I feel bad about resisting. So what you do is you develop a secret private life. And then you have a private life. You have two people with private lives where they don't face each other anymore. And all of that doesn't work and doesn't work. All I have left is deception. If you're living in a life where all you have left is deception, you know the consequences of it. It's time to make the choice. The choice is it's possible, possible, to live a free, honest life. Let's hope we go there. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. We'll be bringing you Warren Marsh. We'll be bringing you Warren Marsh. We'll be bringing you a very interesting tenor piece. You can send me an email, armand@thepositivemind.com. Good to speak with you, my friends. I'll speak with you tomorrow. Thank you.